Hey everybody, and welcome to the first episode of my brand new podcast. It's called Between Throws, and the basic premise is to dig a little bit deeper into how jugglers think. How do they see juggling? How do they see the world? What about their lives affects their juggling, and how does their juggling affect their lives? My name is Taylor Glenn. I've been juggling for a little over 20 years. I've won some awards, I have a world record, but more importantly, I'm fascinated by juggling and the jugglers who do it. Because if I've learned anything about juggling, it's that it's different for everyone. There isn't one way to define it, there certainly isn't one way to do it, and there are a lot of different perspectives on it. So Between Throws is hoping to explore what that net actually looks like. New episodes come out the last Saturday of every month, and this is a little bit of a unique podcast in that you can listen to it anywhere that you typically listen to podcasts, but you can actually watch it on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/taylortries. That allows you to actually see the interview as well as get some additional footage to give you some context of what we're talking about. Before we jump into our first interview, I just want to say that this podcast is made possible by all of my viewers and supporters over on YouTube, as well as on Patreon, and my new site, The Juggler's Guide, which is a resource I made for jugglers like you, with free access to a pattern database, a brand new shop with affordable props, lessons. I worked hard on it, and I really hope it helps. And if you become a paid supporter over there, as well as on Patreon, it just ensures that I can keep this channel going and make projects like this podcast possible. Thank you to everyone who supports, and thank you for listening. Without further ado, let's get into our first interview with Sean Gandini.
If I have a bad day, I'll come here to the gym, and I throw some things, and I feel great. I forget about the world. I'm just in this abstract, geometrical place.
This is Sean Gandini. Sean Gandini is a legend in juggling and in dance and choreography. You've somehow managed to do both and become quite popular and known and respected, which is a whole thing. It's amazing. How would you describe briefly, like, what you do and who you are?
So with Katty, my wife, we've been making things which are juggling at their core for about 30 years. So, and we came at juggling in a slightly different perspective to what people were doing when we started. So looking at juggling as a core substance that one could make stuff out of. So a bit like ingredients. And it felt like at that point, everybody was cooking one kind of meal with juggling. And we thought maybe you can cook all these other kind of meals. So we've been trying to make a series of ingredients and trying to make different kinds of dishes from the core ingredient being juggling. But more and more over the years, dancers come in and visual arts. And
do you see those all as ingredients then?
Like very much so. And I absolutely adore juggling, but I think I could have got as obsessed with something similar.
Right.
Or I don't necessarily... adore it, but I don't necessarily think it is unique in relationship to other things, which perhaps some jugglers do feel like this is the thing.
Well, we were talking about that kind of earlier about, you know, getting into a niche thing is pretty similar regardless of what it is.
Yes, absolutely.
But it is different than not getting into one, right?
Like there's, yes.
Do you think that there's something about the type of person who would get into something like juggling?
Yes,
that
absolutely. Is like there's definitely a mind.
What do you think that is?
Well, this, I mean, particularly if you, there's an obsessiveness.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that obsessiveness can lead people into difficult life situations. Obsession is addiction. It's even an addiction. And God knows it, that there are a lot of negative addictions out in the world. So it's probably one of the more positive ones. And there's, for want of a better word, autistic. I don't like the word autistic so much, but a certain neurological state which is conductive to receiving the repetitiveness that you need in order to learn juggling.
Yeah.
That repeating something. And for me, I remember when I was at my worst with my juggling addiction, there's a like almost like a drug hit that you get from when you practice 6 hours at the gym.
The dopamine. Yeah.
And going to bed, seeing patterns.
Yeah.
Which I occasionally still get. And that's the best.
Huh.
You just, it's like you see these things and it's... Yeah.
Are they new patterns?
I can do, I can, I've dreamt patterns at work, and I see new patterns, so I can make routines in my head at this point, which is kind of nice.
Huh.
Yeah.
How often do you then take those patterns and then actually, are some of them just impossible?
Yeah, some are. Like, I'm sure I suffer, as most creators do, of that 3 a.m. idea that you write down and you go, my God, this is good.
Mm.
And then the next day you go, really? At 3 a.m. you thought that was good? But once in a while, there's a good one. And certainly... Yeah. I am fortunate in that I'm surrounded by some fantastic jugglers a lot of the time. So I can test group, because my brain likes group patterns.
Right.
For some reason. I mean, I like solo juggling as well, but I particularly like 3, 4, 7 people. And recently we've been doing some weaves, which are...
body weaves.
Yeah, body people. Weaves. So, but using the idea of juggling patterns. So you take a juggling pattern and you imagine that the juggling balls are people. And so the weaves are... So for example, the classic three-person weave
is a cascade.
Is a cascade. Or if you're more specific, is one hand juggling three balls, because the exchange point is just one.
Oh.
And then it gets into these weird... We were playing literally, but just transforming a three-ball sink shower into a three-person pattern.
That is weird.
And then... A three-handed sink shower, feeding another three-handed sink shower. Yeah, I know, it's pretty far-fetched.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. How do you, I have so many things to ask about that. you said like you tend to really be fascinated by multiple people, and that's very clear from your work over the years. Like at the minimum, I think I've seen just two.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
For the most part, it's either 3 to 20 with smashed two. And it's just... Do you think that there is something inherent with you about juggling, the connection between the juggling amount of objects and the people, and like you see it as sort of a multi-object thing in general with people? Or
maybe. I don't know where my fascination comes from. Partly choreographic, because I get that that hit, that, because we're talking about almost like that dopamine hit or almost like a druggy hit off an activity or watching something, and I get it off choreography for multiple people,
with dance.
So if I watch Balanchine, like in fact, we just made a piece that's based on Merce Cunningham's choreographies. But the idea, ironically, came sideways from watching a Balanchine. I think it's called Concerto Barocco, which is to a Bach piece, and it's these. I might be wrong with the amount of ballerinas, but I think it's 6 ballerinas, and they're just making these patterns. And I thought, my God. Just imagine just taking the spatial pathways of that Balanchine and having things thrown in between. So that was the starting point. And then I realized that you could map out. I think one of the other things that my brain really gets tickled by is that projecting one art form or the architecture or the structure of one art form onto another.
Yeah.
And then seeing what comes through and whether something new comes out of that, which is...
Do you tend to see that as you're putting juggling on something else, or do you see it the other way around?
I think it's a bit of both, which is really, and we've done it both ways. But I think where it gets the most interesting is when whatever comes out is hovering in between the two things.
Right.
And that really appeals to me. And I could see how sometimes some of the very purest jugglers probably have a problem with how we work, and then they go, well, it's no longer just the pure juggling. You're being so too much dance or
but I remember in some earlier discussions, interviews with you, you said that you started trying to do that, right? Like a lot of your earlier stuff in Gandini Project was trying to keep it very juggling pure, right? And
yes,
then it evolved over time.
Yes, yes, that's very true. Yeah.
You've said
it's been a pathway and looking for new ways of approaching it. Or I was reading an interesting book about David Hockney and his obsession with his work and whether as a maker of things, whether you should like the things you make. I mean, there's that myth of Van Gogh, you know, Van Gogh going, I hate all my paintings. But then David Hockney would have some of his paintings printed big so he could look at them and enjoy them.
Oh.
And then obviously you need to think what you do is good enough to keep going, but you also need to think that the next thing you're going to make is better, or else you would stop if you thought you'd made the best thing you could possibly make.
Do you like watching the things you've made?
Not everything, not the very recent stuff. It takes me a while to look at the recent,
because
I get nervous. Particularly the duet I did with Katia, I haven't watched it on video because that feels too close to home. and I feel vulnerable with it. The group stuff, I'm almost a little bit separated from. Yeah. So I can, particularly some of the pieces I've made recently, I've been on the outside, which actually I prefer to be on the inside. But then it's easier. If I've been on the outside, I've already seen it, so it's okay.
Well, and you do make so many things with so many different people. And I know even sometimes, like with Smash, you use different jugglers.
Mm-hmm.
Does that... Do you tend to see juggling as it's almost its own entity and then jugglers do it? Do you think that there is, like, when you create Smashed, for example, is there a really personal element of the individual jugglers in the show? And then you
so
just...
Smashed is very particular. And I think the personality of the people is so vital to the show.
Yeah.
But I love switching people because new people bring different personalities and different approaches. It almost feels like a different piece.
Right.
And it's maybe the piece we have where the personality of the performers comes through the most.
Because sometimes it's very comedic and sometimes it's very dark. And, but you also have said that that's partly because of the audience and that can kind of throw you, right?
Yes. Like they react in a comedic way to things we think are dark. But they go, rewinding back, the Cunningham piece is very, even though it's quite abstract, abstract is maybe the wrong word, but it's not communicating a narrative
right.
or a story. It's so made on the people that made it that it would be very, very, it's going to be very difficult when we have to replace anybody.
But you are going to do that eventually, probably.
We might have to, which yeah. I never like doing. There's always a moment when you have to replace a performer where you go, my God, it's never going to work again. And then you realize that things go on and they have to live on.
And sometimes yeah. does it make it change in a beautiful way?
New people bring
yeah.
other things. And I mean, we've been fortunate. I wonder how many performers we've worked with. We were so many jugglers.
Well, and it's a lot of juggling. It's kind of a unique thing because I guess there are a few juggling duos or troops or something that have had like a stage name and they've replaced like who the brothers are or something. But yours is really unique in that it's not so much about the personalities of the people in it. It's about the characters are playing almost like a play.
Yeah.
And you can replace them so often, and you do. That's so different from so many other.
It's true. I guess maybe it is the only group that's kept going and where people have come and gone.
Yeah.
I mean, people have left such big traces. I mean, there's so many people that have defined us and who've stayed a decade and maybe gone off and done other things.
Right.
And, I mean, a lot of the people who are with us at the moment have been with us 12, 13 years.
Wow.
So it's quite nice.
That's
a lot. Yeah. Family. It feels like family.
Oh, yeah. Back to this idea of like multiple jugglers, and you said you're so interested in bringing different art forms in and putting juggling onto different art forms, and you're really tickled by music and dance and choreography. Mm-hmm. Like this is very clear in your work and when talking to you as a person. Are you equally tickled by just one dancer, or is it usually a choreography of many dancers? Because your juggling things tend to be more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
So are you also equally kind of drawn to that many dancers as well?
Actually, I am drawn to that many. You mean a group of dancers?
Versus
I am.
One.
Yeah, but I actually, and I feel like it's a criticism of myself. I'm not good at making solos, so I need to learn to make solos and understand the solo form.
What do you think is different about them?
Actually, I don't know. I can make stuff with a group of people all day.
Yeah.
And it's my comfort zone. It's something I'm learning to do. And in fact, we have a number of dance jugglers with us at the moment who are very exciting to me and the possibilities they have to do solos. But my default, in fact, I suffer from too many people on stage. I would say if that would be a self-criticism is that let's add another one, or let's echo that, or let's have a satellite on that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you feel like one person... it's too much about the juggling or something?
No, because it could be a dancer. No, I think it's more literally, it's just what you're good at. I think I will learn to be better at making solos. That's my mission in life.
When you visualize juggling, when you go to sleep and you're thinking of patterns, is it usually more than one person?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I really, I force myself. Like I make a lot of solo juggling on myself. But I normally teach it to two or three people and then see two or three people doing it.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, and with patterns in general, your stuff really fascinates me because a lot of juggling just anywhere in the world is so based on like sort of variability in there's very little time spent on one trick often or one pattern, unless it's like I'm doing five balls or I'm doing seven balls, like very core patterns. Very few people, I feel like you've seen more performance than me. I'm less educated in it, but a lot of your stuff is taking so much time breathing on a pattern, like repeating one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. And you spend a lot of time on those. And it's wonderful and unique compared to, say, a lot of solo jugglers, maybe, where they're really trying to explore change very quickly. What is that?
Well, that's very interesting. And in a way, I hadn't thought about it in the terms that you're saying. But for example, 5-3-4.
Yeah.
It's just one of the best juggling patterns in the world. It's simple and yet has so much complexity within it.
And it was one of the first side swaps that you saw.
Mike showed it to me. We could talk about that. But if I wanted to share the beauty of it with somebody, if I just show them the pattern, they might appreciate it.
Yeah.
If there's two people doing the pattern, you see it a little bit clearer because you're seeing unison.
Side by side.
Side by side.
Yeah.
If you have two people who are color-coded side by side, you see it more. And then one of the things I'm really intrigued about is taking that apart. So for example, I know we did a piece where we would say the colors of 5-3-4, green, white, green, white. So just taking two of the balls out of 5-3-4. So in a sense, taking 5-3-4 with four people and each person doing two of the possible balls and each one saying the color. So I'm adding a sound on top. And my hope is to seeability, legibility.
Yeah.
Because and we talked about this earlier today, which is that idea that people aren't interested in technical juggling. But I think if it's presented to them in an interesting, maybe it's how it's framed.
An accessible
maybe they way. Are. Yeah. And one of the things about structure and staying on something is, I think that legibility, can you make something complicated exciting to somebody that's reading it?
Right.
That's an interesting challenge. And
well, do you tend to see juggling with that sort of, it almost sounds like synesthesia, right? Like the colors. Like, do you naturally feel like you see that, or is that something you're just always trying to add order to make it accessible?
I think I'm adding the synesthesia, although I do quite like, there's that marvelous correspondence between Kandinsky and Schoenberg about I think Schoenberg talked about the sound of Kandinsky's paintings. But I don't know if Kandinsky talked about the colors in Schoenberg's music. But I think that is I'm really fascinated by the orbits within patterns and how the orbits can help you in.
Yeah.
And
like window.
Windows. Yeah. Framing. It's frames, isn't it?
Does.
I mean, we had in spring, we had this piece that was so complicated, but it was two seven ring passing patterns that were color coded, but they were two sided rings. So they were mirrored. So there was a seven ring, two count classic and two count there. One couple doing it right handed and one couple doing it left handed. So you would see. And then because the rings were double sided, the jugglers would change the rings in time with each other to this like techno music that was written in 7/8. So the beats of the music, one bar of the music, it was one repetition of all the colors going from one juggler to the other. And maybe it was too complicated, because to me it was so ecstatically beautiful and complicated. And at one point the music kicks into an 8/8 and we change the juggling pattern exactly at that point into a 8-beat popcorn. And it was totally nerdy. And it was based a little bit around the idea, we were talking about magic earlier, are of an Emsley count, which is a way of you show four cards, but actually you show one of them twice. So in fact, you have an extra, say I have three faces and one card turned over. But when I show you the cards, I show them in such a way that I look like I show you. Right. And it was the same idea that psychologically, right at the end, you think you've seen all the colors and a yellow appears. And my idea was based on that magic thing that somehow you think that there couldn't possibly be another color in there.
That's great. Well, you did magic. Like, you started in magic, right?
Yeah.
You started street performing in magic. You said as a kid you were really into magic. How do you feel like that? There's a lot of, like, you know, sometimes struggle between magicians and jugglers, at least in America. I don't know how it is here. But I think it's fascinating that you started in magic and came over to juggling. How do you feel like that affected even just the way you see juggling? Because I imagine it's different.
For me, in some ways, they're so similar.
Right.
The obsession that we were talking about earlier, that I know you know about the obsession. You've lived with a juggling obsession. It's a drug. And I think magic, there's different kinds of magic. There's people that are drawn to magic for their ability to amaze people, that relation it gives them to other people. Yeah. And I think that's part of it. But I like that a lot. But I also love the practicing coin trick. And that's exactly the same.
It's like dexterous magic.
Yeah, dexterous.
I mean, the big.
Yeah. And that's exactly the same as juggling. The weird thing in magic, though, is that you hide your dexterousness. And that's, to a juggler, that's really weird. Because our whole raison d'être is to show our dexterousness.
Do you feel like that's why you gravitated then more towards juggling? Is there something about that you like?
Yeah, maybe. I think partly this is really trivial, but I'm quite nervous and my hands shake a lot. And the kind of magic I liked was super precise. Mm. So when I get nervous, it didn't work well. So juggling doesn't seem to affect me.
Yeah.
So that was a practical. But I don't know, at a given point, when I was doing magic, I saw somebody do 5 balls, and I could always juggle 3 or 4 balls. It's kind of one of those things that.
It's the same way.
Five was just, it actually just tickled my brain in such a primal level to the point that I had to learn this. I think I've only had that 2 or 3 times in my life where I've seen something and I just felt like I had to.
What were the other ones?
Actually, I saw Michael Hesselin.
No idea.
So he was one of the first people to run a 5-ball Mills mess.
Oh,
and
nice. I can do that.
Yeah, she does, and she does it really
well.
It's
one of the fancy ones.
It's a
beauty.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's a great pattern. 5-ball Mills mess. And I think perhaps not the same as yourself. When I got into juggling, I didn't go to juggling clubs or didn't have the social side. In fact, it was a very individual quest, and I just would practice in the park or in the gym on my own. And
I
in fact,
the same way.
Were you the same?
For the first couple of years until I found it.
And to me, when I first found it, it wasn't necessarily a joyous thing because I went, why are all these people doing the same thing as me? I didn't like it necessarily. It was very solitary juggling for me.
Wow.
And then in fact, my first shows, which weren't shows, were I just stand there and just juggle 5 balls forever.
Right, to some
7
pretty
balls,
music.
To some pretty music.
Yeah.
But I hadn't met other jugglers, so I didn't know many patterns. I literally had a video of Sergei Ignatov, and I thought, that's juggling. I'll just learn what Sergei Ignatov does.
It's like, it's so easy.
Yeah, it's so easy.
It was so easy.
Beautiful. And then when I started doing street shows, I saw Michael Hesselin do a 5-ball Mills mess.
Huh.
And that just blew me away, in the same way that the initial 5 balls. How on earth? But I couldn't do a 3-ball Mills mess. So I said to him, how does that work? Teach it to me. And he went, oh, it's just like 3. And I went, how is it? And then I realized, I've had that a few times over the years. I'm sure maybe most jugglers, where you miss out a real basic.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that's partly through not having the education that music has or dance, where you learn all the basics. And I remember learning chops really late in life, or...
I feel like it's more common, even then. I was at a particular time in history when I think it was everyone kind of learned the same thing,
mm-hmm.
because juggling was still, like, the internet had just come out.
Mm.
But now it seems like there's almost too much
there's
that you're
so
going
to
miss everything.
Yeah, you're going to miss.
Yeah, which
even
is nice.
In a subset, even if all you do is
three balls.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in fact, there's some wonderful 3 balls being done at the moment. There's so much good 3 balls. It's funny because there's an IJA video called The Beauty of 3-Ball Juggling.
Huh.
From the 90s. And if you compare it to the stuff that's being done now, it's like a quantum leap.
Is it like simpler?
It's just the vocabulary is smaller. I mean, I feel like partly what's happened is in the 80s, we had 10 words.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden we have 1 million words. I mean, it's like...
Well, and Siteswap helped.
Yeah, Siteswap helped a lot.
I mean, you were really there when Siteswap was developed, you were really early on, like Mike Day, very interested, and you created the Siteswap DVDs, which are fantastic. Go see them.
I've heard you can watch them for free on the internet.
Yeah, on the Vimeo
somewhere. Yeah, on Vimeo,
yeah.
Free, can you imagine? Yeah, 12 hours of geekiness.
Which I love that you posted that for free. It's very, just wonderful. You should go see it. But sometimes I see like juggling history as like pre-Siteswap and post-Siteswap, because you can almost see a boom of certain type of juggling happening. What do you feel like was the biggest difference for you and like how you approach juggling pre-site swap versus post-site swap, if there's anything.
Yeah, but I feel like there's also a further step, which is the post site swaps. But first, if we just get to site, I mean, it was more the revelation that there were all these patterns.
Right.
And I think
that's hard for people who weren't around before that to understand. Because it's kind of like, oh, it's just describing patterns.
Mm.
I don't think they understand that it
opens. It creates.
Yes.
But there's some crazy things. Like on the site swap DVD, we interview Paul Klimek, who is the first person to have come up with the numbers, yeah. which I just love. And he talks about doing 4-4-1. Maybe for the first time. And it's such a fundamental, like all our dancers in the cunning piece, they do like go a 4-4-1 or one of these, and it's like basic vocabulary.
Mm.
But to think that it's only just over 30 years.
That's crazy.
And 5-3-4, I joke that there was a point where I think there was five of us on planet Earth juggling 5-3-4. Isn't that mind-blowing? Only 35 years ago. So then it all of a sudden says there's all these patterns. And I feel that there's a little period. I don't know if you had this, but I remember getting an early computer and there was different font.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't just Helvetica.
Yeah.
And so writing my mom a letter with like 28 fonts, which, you know what I mean? Because you
yeah.
So at the beginning, we're like, there's site swaps, let's use all of them. And then I think now we know they're there. And maybe they're not all useful or conductive to things.
Right.
And then there's, for example, the way Wes juggles, where I feel like, even though he understands site swaps, the way he makes patterns isn't necessarily site swap based.
Hmm.
And I think that there's a further, site swap says there are all these other patterns, but I think it's just a tool. And I think you can make patterns in all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, a lot of the time it's almost like you figure, or you, I see people, I'm not as creatively involved in this process, but I've seen people sort of come up with something and then try to translate it into SiteSwap.
Yeah.
As opposed to almost in some ways, it started as SiteSwap and then you translate it into juggling.
Yeah.
And for you, it's probably extra interesting because I'm sure you understand a lot of music theory and music notation theory stuff, right? Because you're very into music.
Yeah.
It's super weird that juggling is so much newer than that.
Oh my God. But so much like early music notation, 1300.
Right.
Like, imagine if there was like, in fact, in the duet with Katy, we do a little bit of that imagining.
Hmm.
I mean, I imagine a fictitious juggling history. So medieval jugglers and I mean, there is somewhere along the line, a parallel history. Like for example, ballet comes 18th century. Some of the French royalty got really into ballet.
Right.
And so ballet got institutionalized. And the reason ballet is in the Western world, the form it is because of that little period. If that same king, king had been into juggling, so the world would be full of these juggling houses.
Weird.
And there'd be ballerinas on the street corners, you know, with little, setting fire to their point shoes going, this is my final trick.
Yeah. Please watch me.
Really watch me.
Wow.
Yeah. It fascinates me that. And in a way, but then it means that we're in the golden age now. Right.
We're getting to see when it really...
Yeah. It's really amazing.
30 years is not very much.
No,
Just writing down patterns is only 50 years.
Yeah.
And 20 of them or 10 of them were just weird words that didn't really translate. Yeah. It wasn't a language.
No.
Yeah.
No. And now we have many different ways of documenting patterns. And so many... And people coming at it from all kinds of different perspectives. And then the actual definition of juggling also, obviously... opening out to
that's
to,
what this is all about this podcast
that's
great do you as somebody who really has seen and understands the core difference or relationship even of like music notation and site swap like looking at both of those objectively, is there anything that you sort of like an aspect to music the way that they communicate it and write it that you kind of wish that we had in juggling or that you'd like to see happen? Maybe not tangibly exactly what that solution is, but just some aspect of being able to communicate music that we don't have yet, if anything.
I don't know. That's a really interesting... I mean, it's very interesting. We've been working with orchestras recently and just seeing how... we worked with this amazing conductress called Karen Kammerer. I'm mispronouncing a second name. I call her Karen. Amazing conductress
Karen.
Called Karen.
I know Karen.
You know Karen.
I know Karen.
But Karen sits down with a room of people that she's never met before, and she goes, let's go from bar 40, and then they're straight in.
Huh.
And that is an amazing phenomenon, where if we have a group of people, the people that we work with regularly have a common vocabulary, but if I, most of the jugglers I meet, one needs a moment, apart from even assuming people know side swaps, there's dwell time variations, there's a, so that
everyone
common,
does it different.
I mean, and that's maybe to do about jugglers being individualistic and circus performers being individualistic.
Like, and intentionally or just?
Well, there's two levels on what, one is the obsessiveness. Okay, so that's just you in a room and your objects, and maybe outside of the performance context, that's good for your brain and it's lovely and it's great. I mean, I know for me, even now, I've juggled probably almost 40 years. If I have a bad day, I'll come here to the gym and I throw some things and I feel great.
Huh.
I forget about the world. I'm just in this abstract geometrical place. Huh. So that's the solo, like the personal relationship to the neurophysical act.
Mm.
Then there's the artistic thing where one encourages juggling artists to be unique, which is great.
Yeah.
But there's another side of the art form, which would be the ensemble thing. And that requires, which is what we do
really
a little
like
bit.
That, yeah.
And that's a different thing. You need a common vocabulary. And in that sense, I am envious of both classical art form, classical dance forms like ballet or orchestra, where there's X amount of people who can go from page 40, bar 6.
And some of that,
straight in.
I guess it sounds like what you're saying is a lot of that is not so much to do with how we communicate it, but just the core essence of it. Like you can just,
yeah.
I can sing a note if I know what the note is.
Mm.
But me throwing a 5, even in sight swap, is going to be different than your 5 and the amount of time I hold the ball.
Yeah.
And that's all going to look slightly different.
And people learning, like dancers learn other people's phrases very quickly and they can reverse them very quickly. But it's changed that there is a wonderful generation of circus students coming out of the schools that can do this. But where you go, let's do 3 throws of this, take a step to the left, turn, and then 4 throws of that on this music. 5, 6, 7, 8, go. And and I mean, dancers do that so quickly.
In relation to the music.
In relationship to the music on the beat.
Right. So you're not having to describe so much like now.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Yeah, I know. But then it is also one of the beauties of juggling is the individualism of the performer. So I'm torn between both things. The selfishness of the stuff we're trying to make and the fact that people enjoy being creative.
Yeah, I mean, do you find them as exclusionary fully? Like,
Well, I mean, interestingly enough, we've been working more and more with dancers who juggle.
Right.
Because they also come from a culture where they learn other people's material. And for example, one of our most extraordinary performer, Erin O'Toole, her name is, and she's a ballerina.
Hmm.
And she joined us almost 10 years ago to do 4x4, the ballet juggling piece. And she's been learning more and more juggling, and she's a really good juggler. She has no ambition to make tricks or do tricks per se. She'll learn the tricks she needs for the shows. And I think she enjoys juggling.
Right. It's more about
the craft. But it's a practical, it's a craft.
Yeah.
There's very little, apart from in our small world, or maybe in traditional circus. And I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing, of craft interpreters.
Mm.
The a priori, if you go to circus school, you're not necessarily an interpreter. You are a creator.
Hmm. Do you feel like, you know, there's often this sort of division between sport or technical juggling and artistic juggling? It's a thing. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you feel like in some ways that more sporty side is more just the kind of that mindset you're talking about, that crafty mindset versus the...
Oh, I feel that's yet another can of worms. That's a whole other thing.
Separate.
I mean, I actually love sports juggling and I'm totally fascinated by how far the technical level, going back to sight swaps of 5-3-4, which is that you have a base pattern, you do one above, one below. If you go from 3-4-2-3, if you go, 6-4-5 and all of that. And there's people who've done like 20 rounds of the 8-ball version.
Right.
Like I generally would have said it would have taken longer. I didn't think everybody would... Like, there's probably 100 people who can run 7.56,
right,
which I find just mind-blowing. But it doesn't link up. Like, people who are very, very good at sports juggling are not necessarily the best people, the people most suited to go into our kind of stuff.
Right.
And I've so got a really good example of amazing nine-ball jugglers who probably wouldn't enjoy doing our thing and wouldn't fit in because their brain doesn't like remembering smaller, simpler sequences.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
There's so many.
But then they, I mean, it links up to what you I think, are trying to explore in this as yet unnamed,
unnamed juggling
maybe project. It's the unnamed
podcast,
which is the brain and how the brain and the relationships to particular, like there are some extraordinarily good numbers jugglers, mm-hmm, who I think their brains don't like smaller repetitive patterns or clean finishes. Mm. Like in our world, you finish a pattern cleanly.
Yeah. I'm the opposite.
Are you? Yeah, you see, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a big...
Like you juggle until you drop.
Yeah.
But I actually am even in a weird third category where I will juggle until I'm just able to drop in sort of a performy way.
Okay. Yeah, you're sort of in between the two types.
I'm like, how do I market the drop? Which is a whole other brain.
Yeah, there's a podcast to be done or a conversation to be had, the drop.
Well,
but when I was younger, I used to get more upset about like just finish cleanly.
Mm.
But there's a couple at the moment of extraordinary numbers jugglers doing stuff that I couldn't even imagine doing, but they never catch up. They never finish cleanly. It's almost, and it doesn't bother them.
It doesn't bother.
It
but it would bother the crap out of you.
Yeah, it bothers me like
just
tremendously.
Just watching it bothers you.
Wow. Like finish that clean. Yeah, but then I'm a presentationalist, and then this gets into another discussion, which is when you practice, like, so we're at the YMCA and Katty and I juggle at the YMCA.
Yeah.
If a group of kids come swimming to go to the, I will do my cleanest tricks.
Because they're there.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I will do like a ring pull or something. I mean, I'll do a little show.
I have that
you
too.
You do that, yeah.
And I'm not even a performer, but my juggling practice changes around other people.
Okay, whereas Katty's amazing. Katty doesn't switch. She's there to practice. Occasionally she'll be diplomatic and she'll go maybe the Egyptian president
but
is there watching.
She's so clean anyway.
Yeah, like, she is so clean. Yeah. We had an American astronaut watching us. And in fact, we were all trying to do our best because he stayed to watch for about an hour.
Oh.
And I whispered to everybody that he was the astronaut. He didn't say, I'm the astronaut. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, Katty's so clean.
She's so, I don't think that she's, I can't imagine Katty dropping. I know she has, but she's just so.
I know, she's so.
Calm.
Yeah.
Very calming.
Grounded.
Hopefully I can get Katty on this at some point.
Yeah, we'll try and convince her. We'll do it, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many threads there. One of the things that I've always wondered with the way that you see juggling, because you clearly do visualize it with more than one person. I think we've already said that, but. Does it ever frustrate you when you go to actually create the thing and see the patterns manifested with people in real life, the just slight imperfections that humans have, like the fact that you can never get quite in sync, or is it, I mean...
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but yeah, that's...
It doesn't bug you though? Like it's not a thing for you? It's just like, oh, that's part of it?
It bugs me a little bit, but I'm an approximalist, so I'm not, like for example, if I watch the Petit Travers, who love, they do these things where they throw all the balls. And I think they're more precise on their dwell time than us. And I mean, this is interesting because Cunningham, in Cunningham technique or in Cunningham's choreographies, there's often what they call Cunningham unison, which is unison, but it's slightly personalized.
That's
so it's not ballet. Yeah.
That's totally Gandhi.
Yeah. I think we are. So I don't. It depends on what, but I don't mind a certain amount of personality even in the juggling.
Huh.
Because it has a humanity to it.
Yeah. Well, and that's funny because I always imagined from the outside in that you really would, just because you do deal in like repetition of pattern, it seems so much theoretically like it is about the pattern. Mm-hmm. Like you're trying to show the pattern and how it looks on a gross scale. But that's interesting that you like really have you like that little personal touch.
Yeah, Gandini unison. Yeah. I mean, something that we've been discovering recently is how idiosyncratic everybody is with dwell time. Mm. And we're trying to understand more and manipulate dwell time and measure dwell time, which is, I feel like, a next bigger barrier. And to me, the discovery, which partly, there's a juggler called Sakari Manisto, who works with us a lot, who has an amazing intuitive understanding of dwell time. The same as Wes. Wes also has an extraordinary understanding, very, I would say, intuitive. I don't know if he's ever analyzed it. Knowing him, he probably has. But of just when the hand needs to be empty, when it needs to do a hot potato to catch something. And it's something that I understood late. I'm a hot potato juggler, a very old school circus. Soon. Yeah, a little too soon. And it's something that I've tried to correct over the last X amount of years. But I feel like there's a whole world there.
It's an interesting idea that, like, it's not only about when it's in the air. I mean, SightSwap explores that a little bit, where you're suddenly paying more attention to not just the arc or the pattern of the throw. If anything, it actually doesn't do that, right? SightSwap does not account for that.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And probably, in many ways, it doesn't. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And before that, it was probably more concerned with, like, what is the shape?
Yeah.
And then SightSwap said, no, let's pay attention to the timing. And then something is caught and thrown.
Yes, absolutely.
But that time in between the catch and the throw is weird.
Yeah, the dwell time. And I mean, there's systems that are sort of more in-depth system like MHN, multi-handed notation, where you can...
I have no idea what that
where
means.
That's like...
Oh, no, I have seen that. Yeah. Mike has tried to explain it to me.
Yeah,
Mike Day.
That
it's confusing.
That would do it, but it gets so nerdy.
Yeah.
But then you look at somebody like Bobby May, and Bobby May had such a great understanding of dwell time.
Yeah.
Without probably analyzing, just maybe intuitively.
It seems like something that you intuitively get better with as you get more comfortable with juggling.
Mm.
I almost think sometimes it's out of sort of laziness in a great way. Like, it's efficiency is a better word. The more you get into juggling, the more efficient you get. So you start thinking more about how long can I hold the object for.
Yes, interesting.
But I'm not sure. But it's something that I'm always actually, it's kind of... when I can tell somebody is going from more the beginner juggling into the intermediate or advanced, when they start understanding even what that is.
But then there's a weird exception. Going back to the extraordinary numbers jugglers who are around at the moment, I would say there's a certain amount of them that have a kind of constant dwell time that doesn't vary in their patterns. Maybe that's why they're so good at the patterns. But I would say they don't necessarily have the understanding of dwell time.
But they do have dwell time.
They have a constant. And what I find fascinating in people like Sakari and Wes is that being able to adjust
control it. Ooh, kind of like
and
you
in
would
fact,
height.
We've been playing in the company recently. I've been a bit obsessed with this. And there's a little something that we've been playing with where everybody juggles at the same height, but at different speeds and at different dwell times. So you can have two jugglers juggling at the same height, but at different speeds. And I find that really intriguing.
I try to teach students that way. Like, let's keep it the same height, but
change as well.
The speed.
Yeah, but that's good. Then you're teaching starting from the dwell time. Which
and being able to control it. Because even if it's something you don't intuitively understand, I think it's a skill that you can develop if you understand with exercises what's actually happening. But it is interesting that, yes, the ability to control it is a nerdy skill within the skill.
A skill within a skill. And it's probably one of those,
like
one of the pieces I've been wanting to make for a while, which I haven't made, is a three ball cascade piece that's just all dwell time distortion. So two or three people in unison. And there's a weird, nice, one hand has a hot potato, one hand has cold potato, and it looks like a limp. And actually, if you show it to somebody, they'd think you're a bad juggler. So it's these very nerdy. I mean, there's a separate conversation, and I'm not necessarily the best person for this conversation, which is about the optimal teaching of juggling.
Of course.
And juggling and education. And I mean, you do so much teaching, so you have a good insight into,
In certain ways. But I've, you know, I'm learning every day.
So then, because I feel in my life, I feel like I'm a slug. I leave a trail. Well, no, the slug is a bad word, but I leave a trail of jugglers, of people, because I love teaching people to juggle.
Yeah.
So I leave, and you must leave a bigger, like a comet. That's nice. A comet that leaves constellation of jugglings behind.
Space trash.
No. But juggling trash.
But there's something nice. You tend to do it so personally. Sometimes people will come to me, you taught me to juggle.
Oh, yeah, you haven't met them. Okay, yeah.
It's really strange.
Yeah, that's a very different from me. Yeah, because I love it because I meet people that I taught maybe 15 years ago. There's a lovely gentleman who juggles here who already juggled, but we pushed him and he loves it. Again, the obsessive mind.
You have to have something like that. It's interesting. It's kind of the difference between somebody who can juggle and somebody who is a juggler.
Yeah.
It's that obsessiveness.
Because there's people who I see who make great jugglers and they quickly learn and then they move on to something else.
Why is that? I have never understood that. I'm like, you're obsessed with other things.
Okay, so here's an interesting question, and I don't know the answer. Is learning quickly dissuasive to diving deep into a skill? Is having some ardor or hardship in the process of learning conducive to getting good at it because the challenge?
Well, I mean, we could look also, it's not quite the same, but I was curious to hear, like, you did have a very unique upbringing. Mm-hmm. You grew up in Havana, in Cuba, with very alternative lifestyle parenting and all that amazing. It's so unique and interesting, and you got really into magic. And is there something, if you had to pick something, like one thing about your surroundings or your parenting or whatever, that if you took out, you think would drastically limit the possibility of you becoming a juggler?
Like, I don't know about becoming a juggler, but becoming an artist.
Yeah.
Certainly my parents were so giving and so generous. And I remember we had this quite extraordinary Portuguese man who'd just come back from fighting in Mozambique or something, was staying at a house in Havana, and my parents were away, and he came to pick me up from school, and we picked up all these bits of tree, but huge amounts, and we just made this, we turned the whole house into like this modern art exhibition.
And with trees.
And kind of hammered things into the walls, and a rational parent would go, what the f***?
Your parents did that with you.
Yeah. My parents came home to that.
Oh.
And I remember my mum going, oh, Sean, that's so wonderful.
Wow.
Whereas I think the average mum would go, what the hell is going on here? What have you done to the house?
Yeah.
But I think so. And Katy laughs at me sometimes that my default is to assume that people will like what I'm making.
Huh.
And I think probably artists come in all from different molds, because there's the other mold where is your parents haven't given you that, and your artistic mold is to show them that you can do it.
Hmm.
So you're coming with I'll show the world. Whereas to me, in fact, I have suffered from it when people don't like things. Well, why don't you like them? But
it affects you?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You really internalize it?
Yeah.
Does it change the way then you make the next thing, you think?
No, because eventually I deal with it. But I have an initial difficult... With age and time, you've had enough people criticize what you do that you get strong. I mean, we've always been quite stubborn, because early when we started making stuff, that people are like, what the hell are they getting
right.
Sean and
it's
Katy
very
doing?
Different.
It was very, very, very different. Going back to juggling conventions and all that, when we showed our early stuff in the context of the English juggling conventions, it was so controversial. Like, so, so controversial. I remember we did one show in a British juggling convention. It was in Birmingham. And I wanted to do half an hour and they wanted us to do 10 minutes. So I came to the negotiation that we would start the piece at the interval.
Hmm.
So as people were leaving, we would start this like ceremony thing and then just go for half an hour. And then when we finished, it was quite both disturbing and interesting, in that half the audience were booing us and half the audience were, and half the audience were clapping. And it was really, and I remember we did another one in those early days, this must be 93, 94, where we put a suggestion box out, any thoughts, and there was so many people hated it, pretentious rubbish.
Go ahead, sorry.
But actually, at that point, we kind of fueled on that. It was like,
I'll prove you wrong or something.
Yeah,
that feeling that you were talking about, though.
Yeah.
That negative feedback that maybe some kids get.
Yeah. Huh. But I knew how to take it from that world. I was bad with the critics. The first few bad reviews we got, they really hurt me.
More of the general public.
Yeah.
Do you think that part of you is maybe looking for their approval more than jugglers?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's a strange. I mean, it's if you are a public artist, it's a difficult thing. How do you deal with? And most stuff gets bad reviews. I mean, if you look, dealing with reviews is a difficult thing. It gets easier with time. The first few bad ones we got, I was so angry.
Well, it really fascinates me how you always, like, a lot of your work is very inspired by like a choreographer mm-hmm. or some sort of artist in some way. And especially more recently, like you're really homaging, or recently in the last 20 years mm-hmm. as opposed mm-hmm. to the earlier, mm-hmm. earlier stuff. And you, it's usually something external from juggling. And I think it's really, it just occurred to me, like, have you ever considered, or how come you don't ever seem to do homages or direct
to like Bobby May? I sometimes think that. Yeah, Bobby May. Or,
it seems like it reveals a bit about how you see juggling versus the, like,
maybe
that
the
relationship.
Duet. Maybe the duet that we did recently with Katty is our reflection on juggling. And
but what is it about that part that you want to take more?
I mean, it's partly to do with what you were saying earlier, that even artistically, juggling has this very small history. I adore Bobby May and I adore Sergei Ignatov and so many, Francis Brun, Michael Motion. It's short and it's a very, it's a different form. So.
And it's usually individualized.
Yeah.
Like one person.
Yeah, yeah.
Minus circuses, but it's a different thing.
It maybe doesn't have the breadth that dance or theater has had, because dance or theater have had 2,000 years to grow it.
Do you feel like that's why you tend to take inspiration from those things? Is that it's a piece that you want to sort of add to juggling to be like, look what you can do and look what they've done?
Maybe. I don't
know.
Or
is it just a personalized...
It's just what feeds you? I mean, what feeds your imagination? In a way, everybody's feeding their imagination somewhere or other. I mean, it's funny. It leads into those complicated relationships of where you take and are you copying or are you not? And then I feel like some of the great artists, they're just taking so far away from the source.
Yeah.
Like if you're painting a tree, then the tree doesn't mind being copied.
But right.
It could say you're copying me, you're using me.
That is a fascinating discussion. I almost see your stuff, it reminds me of like a cinematic universe. Like you're existing within the universe of, what's her name? The one that smashed was...
Oh, Pina Bausch.
Pina Bausch.
Like,
in the Pina Bausch universe.
Oh, yeah.
And you're in that, and this is how things sort of work in that universe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really, more than like a copy or something. Mm. But that's how my brain immediately saw it. I was like, oh, that's cool. It's like, we got to see?
Maybe it is. Maybe we are imagining alter egos for juggling. Because in some ways, what's great is that juggling can be a blank canvas.
Yeah.
And because so little has been done with it so far, and there's some great stuff being done at the moment, that we have all these possibilities. I mean, I have so many, like my notebook of ideas for pieces is so never ending.
Do you think there's something different? I mean, there clearly is something different, but what do you think it is that makes you somebody who wants to explore all those different alter egos versus somebody who does the same act over and over for 60 years? Like Chris Cremo or something. Mm. Is there something about, what about your brain you think makes that different?
Oh. I mean, partly if I go back to my childhood, I was always very much encouraged to be creative. And my dad is a great lover of experimental art.
Mm.
So I grew up listening to a lot of free jazz, experimental novels. So that was just part of my education. It's not an alternative.
Yeah.
It's the core. And so that idea of... thinking sideways when you make is just what I was taught, is how I see life.
Change is a natural part of your brain.
Yeah, change is change.
That's great.
I am curious about Chris Cremo and the idea. I mean, maybe in a way it's an extraordinarily beautiful piece of art, the fact that you would just do the same thing. And sometimes I'm jealous of the artist that just does... shoes and jelly.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? I just put shoes and jelly. And you look at their 40 years of work and it's just slight variations of shoes and jelly.
Yeah.
And I would die an unhappy being.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Or like the same medium, juggling. But like, yeah, I was talking to Delaney and like just, it was so very clear to her. I've talked to her before and she's like, I think I'm going to have to stop like putting as much effort into balls because I need to get really good at clubs and rings. And it's just really interesting that even just three things, it's too diverse.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just, you know, oh, I forgot people do three balls, she said to me recently.
She's a fascinating...
I will definitely be talking to her.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And the obsession with pushing the technique to its limit.
Yeah.
That's something that... marginally we have been interested in, but not to the point of people like Delaney, and there's a generation of them.
But it's a different technique too. Like you're pushing certain techniques, especially in compound ways, compound techniques, versus a very fine, specific technique. Mm. It's not a point as much of a circle.
But I get exhilarated by the purism of what they do.
Yeah. No, it is.
And, and she's unique in that wanting to do things which have never been done before.
Yeah, it's very creative in a different way too. I'm very fascinated with you and Kati as, I mean, it's just one, it's very unique to have found each other at such a young age and then grown a whole very successful thing together and be so connected with it the entire time. Like, it's not like one of you decided to do it and one of them kind of dropped off or whatever. And really it feels like it wouldn't get the Gandini project thing wouldn't be what it is without both of you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know because it's like your name, I think a lot of the time it's easy to forget.
I sometimes feel bad. I feel bad. You know, the first version did have her name on it. It was just her name. And then just there's something about the Italian name that sticks. Sometimes people talk about the Gandinis and I don't think about it being my name.
Right.
So it's become this entity that's... But we wouldn't have survived if we hadn't been two.
Yeah.
Because also what we're talking about, the hard times, the moments where you doubt what you're doing or creatively or... And she has this beautiful practical side.
Yeah,
so I'm going,
say.
Let's do 100 jugglers. And she goes, maybe 20 is more reasonable financially.
Spending time with you in LA, we filmed the project and it was wonderful to see her be like, Sean...
Wait a minute.
Sean, why don't we not do that much? Or it was just a beautiful relationship. If you took Sean out of Gandini, what's something that you feel like the biggest thing that would be missing? And if you took Kati out, what would be missing?
Kati made so much of... Kati has an incredible movement juggling intuition. She makes materials so quickly and so complicated that often we all struggle to quickly. She'll quickly sketch something. She goes, this is nothing, but it could be something like this. And normally it's a final version because normally that's the good version. So she has an intuition and then she has a practicality.
Yeah.
So there's Kati as the person that brings creative energy to the two. But there's also Kati as a performer where she has a solidity.
Yep. You can see it on
trustworthy.
Stage.
She's there.
You trust her. And that's important when you're
that's
watching
so, like juggling. When I did the duet with her recently, I'm like, it's okay. I'm with Kati.
Yeah.
It's all right.
That's nice.
And if you took me out, I don't know. I have a lot of enthusiasm. I'm a catalyst. I'm good at convincing people to do stuff. And I have a grasshopper brain. So I can be in the rehearsal space and in an hour I can sketch 10 different things. So maybe one of those things is the thing that'll work. So I'm good at quickly, I don't run out of inspiration very often.
What a wonderful...
It's that click, click, click.
It's really fortunate and amazing that you guys are so beautifully...
It's funny, isn't it, with the people you meet in your journeys through life.
I love it. This is a very quick question because I'm a nerd about video, but you're one of the people that I've always been really fascinated how you explore both stage and you've explored video in certain projects, like more projects than a lot of performers. You've done video projects. And what strikes me about them is that they've always been very video in that they're not just a stage act on video. You're using the video. You film from above. I think you're the first one I saw.
Oh, yeah, filming from above. Yeah, you did that beautiful filming from above. That gets sent to me.
But that's like, I was thinking about that. Like, I'm sure that's where I was obsessed with that so early on in my juggling. And I was like, that, I absolutely saw your, like, eye juggle video.
Yeah, the eye juggle.
And it's gorgeous. And it makes juggling look so different. How does your brain, how are you able to do both? They're so different.
Actually, I feel like it's framing and it's that thing of thinking just as juggling being an ingredient.
Yeah.
And because I'm interested in art forms, I mean, when you were saying whether you watch things, I am dissatisfied by cinematic output and I feel like there's so
with
much
juggling.
More to be done. If only there was a filmmaker out there we could convince to make but I feel and you're doing great work with that, but I feel I
have a different aesthetic though. It's I'm not as artistic. I'm very much the mass marketing side of things.
But that's so important.
It is, it's different. It's not, I'm not pushing art as much as I am accessibility. And I recognize that.
We need both in the world.
We do.
Art and accessibility. They float in a boat.
But like, what is the hardest thing about approaching a video versus a stage thing? Or what's the biggest difference?
Actually, but now I feel like I'm relearning all of that. And I'm trying partly through working with Ala Kofka, with whom, well, hopefully we make this movie, and with whom we made that movie in LA. It's so different. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
And it's how you frame it, where you look at it from.
Do you like that aspect of it?
Oh, I love it. I love it. There's so much more. Yeah. And I mean, I'm also, because I did a bit of painting when I was a youngster. So I am fascinated by visual art. Mm-hmm. And I love mathematics. And so sometimes I feel like my loving of mathematics turns the art into a particular kind of thing, which sometimes frustrates me that I'm not freer with how I look at it, that I always want to duplicate it and rotate it and have five of them. It's again that.
Perhaps that's part of why you like the pattern.
Yeah,
more than
yeah.
Just
I feel
trick,
like,
trick, trick.
And but I feel like I, interestingly, even though they're not show videos, that they're patterns. So I guess a recurring theme is the obsession with patterns.
Yeah.
Patterning. And I realize we use text quite a lot, but I often use text almost like I don't worry about what the words mean, and it's more the order that they come in or the rhythm that they create.
Yeah.
So that's jugglers using text as opposed to, yeah.
Weird. All right, last big question was, it's the most common question, but I don't want you to be limited with it. What does juggling actually mean in your mind? Not trying to please anybody, like this is the right definition. Like just if I say juggling, what does that actually
feel like?
Actually,
it's throwing and catching.
Throwing
that's
and catching.
It.
That's no, it. That's interesting.
That's it. It's really simple. I love all the other stuff that comes out of it.
See, I don't want you to worry about that. I just wanted to know.
It's just throwing and catching.
That's great.
Like, I get here to the gym, I take three balls and I throw a big cascade and I play with dual times and that's it.
So,
and everything comes out of that.
That's so cool. If somebody had never juggled before and never seen it before, and you had to just describe it to them, the feeling, not the action, but like what it feels like to juggle, what does that feel like to you?
It's an alien. Describe an alien. The
oh,
pleasure.
Yeah, it, describing pleasure. It. And they can't see it. Or somebody.
I mean, there is a forcefulness to it. Mm-hmm. It's an active thing. And you are controlling things outside your body. That's super important, and that's really radically different to dancing.
Yeah.
Dancing, your body's moving through space. And in juggling, you are controlling things in space outside of your body, which is quite extraordinary. And you're dealing with gravity, and this is intellectualizing it.
I love it.
But the deceleration and acceleration and parabolic arcs.
And how it's not linear. It really confuses my brain.
It's quite magnificent, really.
You're mathy. You're more mathy.
It's mathy.
No, I see it that way, but I don't understand it. Like, I understand that it gets slower.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
isn't that beautiful, though?
It's
like,
beautiful.
Even just the throw of one ball from one hand to the other has such fundamental physical implications about our world and gravity and... Yeah.
And control.
And control.
Cooperation.
Control. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of that.
That's wonderful.
We chose a good hobby.
Yes, we did. I mean, I wouldn't get to meet somebody like you.
Oh, no.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
for
so
being
much.
Here.
It's very nice. I could talk with you all day. So.
I know. Maybe we'll do it again.
We'll do it. Yeah. Oh.
Thank you so much for listening to the first episode of Between Throws. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you got something out of it. And I hope it gave you some questions to ponder as you think about what juggling means to you. How do you see it? How does it affect your life? And how has your life affected your juggling? Make sure you check back on the last Saturday of every month for new episodes. Thank you again to my wonderful guest, Sean Gandini, for all of his insight and for letting me pry into his brain a little bit. For more about current Gandini projects, as well as showings, make sure you head over to GandiniJuggling.com. If you have a suggestion for a juggler you'd like to see on this podcast, leave me a comment telling me who you'd like me to interview, and we'll see if we can make it happen. The Between Throws intro song is a wonderful track by the artist I love called Gem. You can check out that track as well as their other music on SoundCloud.com. Our end credit music is by the artist Psy315, who also happens to be my talented brother. He doesn't have a SoundCloud, but he does have an Instagram where he shares his art and his music. You can check that out at instagram.com/Psy315. It's S-I-E-315. Once again, Between Throws is made possible by all of my supporters, especially those on Patreon. You can support me there by going to patreon.com/TaylorTries, or you can become a paid supporter on my new site, The Juggler's Guide, by heading to jugglersguide.com. Thanks again to all the supporters who make this channel and my podcast possible, and thank you for listening.